Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
50 years ago today, the terrifying Russian Sputnik, the symbol of Soviet dominance in science, technology, and space exploration, little Sputnik, got a human face. Yuri Gagarin. Google his picture. He's handsome, even in his Russian cosmonaut getup, when he became the first human to orbit the Earth, April 12, 1961. Here is his human voice describing the launch.
I felt the pressure of the G-forces on my body. It pushed me right down into my seat. It was difficult to move my arms. I knew it wouldn't be long until the rocket had left the Earth's gravitational pull. And I was in orbit.
Yuri Gagarin speaking about his mission as the first man to orbit the Earth. Here is his actual Russian voice speaking over the radio during the mission.
Земля, я космонавт.
Космонавт, я земля.
Земля, я космонавт.
He's telling the Russian controllers back on Earth he was okay, he was doing fine, feeling well. You see, there was more than a little concern that Gagarin had volunteered for a suicide mission back. Long before NASA's Mercury astronauts coined the term spam in a can to describe their cramped space capsules, Russian cosmonauts might have used the term toast in a jar to describe the untested technology for spaceflight that the Soviets tested on that day in 1961. Gagarin's bravery doesn't really come through in those words, "I'm doing well, I'm feeling fine," but in fact, he answered the most important question on that day: humans could survive and live in space. And 50 years ago today, that knowledge came in the Russian language.
Moscow calling. Moscow calling. All radio stations are broadcasting this message. This is an official announcement from TASS. The first cosmonaut in the world is in space.
The Soviets trumpeted their success on that day in 1961 as a sign of their technical prowess and scientific superiority. It inflamed the competitive spirit in the U.S., which led to the successful U.S. moon landing less than a decade later by U.S. astronauts. In talking about his flight, Gagarin, though, spoke more poetically about the beauty of seeing the world from space and the humbling experience of feeling so small in comparison. And once again, a U.S. president has evoked our old competitive spirit that brought about those technological triumphs of the last century.
This is our generation's Sputnik moment.
A new Sputnik or Gagarin moment to improve knowledge of science and math in the U.S. And on this day, we want to start a conversation about what that actually means. It's got to be different than the old beat the Soviets idea. Perhaps the new fluency in science and technology will be less like test-taking and more like recreational doodling, more like this web video from a very popular website created by recreational mathematician Vi Hart, a young college student, called Math Doodling, where she doodles on video while she fearlessly talks about some of the most challenging concepts in mathematics. Infinite series, anyone? Anyone?
Say you want to draw a line of elephants, each holding the tail of the next one. Normal elephant, young elephant, baby elephant, dog-sized elephant, puppy-sized elephant, all the way down to Mr. Tusks and beyond, which is at least a tiny bit awesome because you can get an infinite number of elephants in a line and still have it fit across a single notebook page. But there's questions like, what if you started with a camel, which, being smaller than an elephant, only goes across a third of the page?
What if you started with a camel? Well, Vi Hart stopped by the studio last week to explain how she thinks the Sputnik moments in this century may be more like doodling than racing to the moon.
In my view, it's not the number of people, and having more people studying math isn't necessarily going to fix the problem, except for maybe that you'll have a higher likelihood of getting some creative people in there, because creative people are afraid of mathematics. They don't see it as a creative field, because it's not presented that way. It's presented as very right and wrong. Your answers are right or they're not, and there's exactly one right answer. That's the way they do it in school.
So as a musician, I mean, you've been around creative people for probably as long as you've been around your dad, the mathematician. Creative types are intimidated by math. How do you assure them not to fear?
What I try and do, especially in my videos online, is show people that they can understand it and that everyone is smart. I mean, you don't need to have a PhD in mathematics to understand some really cool concepts. So by trying to open people's eyes to what they can understand, I hope they'll fear it less.
So if you were to advise the president on how to actually implement this idea, and if there were to be a world that would come about of much more mathematically conversant folks, how do you think it would affect your life?
How would it affect
what kind
my
of
life?
Conversations would you have more normally than are maybe rare now?
At the moment, I think the biggest problem is getting people to stop and listen and kind of open their ears and be willing to hear about something that's mathematical, because immediately there's that resistance. So taking that resistance away would just make communication so much easier.
So give my 9-year-old daughter advice on, all right, if the president has said you're going to have to learn a lot more math in the coming years in your elementary and middle school curriculum, advise her maybe not to be afraid.
Yeah, well...
Her name's Regan, by the way.
Okay, well, Regan, the problem with your teachers in school is that they're always going to be telling you you're either right or you're wrong. And that's just, I think, a terrible way to kind of teach students. It's good to be wrong, and it's good to play. And math teachers usually don't understand when you do something differently that it's not necessarily wrong. It might be a new way of doing it. A lot of students come up with really awesome, creative ways to do things. They come up with the interesting questions that most people are afraid to ask because they've learned it one way and they figure, oh, no, of course, this is right and that's wrong. But those are interesting questions, and teachers usually don't have the math background to admit that they're wrong when you ask an interesting question.
You're making a subversive out of my 9-year-old. I love that. Uh-huh. So how did you in your own life discover that learning to be wrong actually led you into a place where you could have real understanding of complicated mathematics?
Well, most people think of being wrong as an ending point. You did all this work and you're wrong. Now life is over and someone else was right. But being wrong is really a starting point, because for whatever reason you were wrong, you've just learned something cool, something to be explored. And no one's ever really completely and totally wrong. There was some thought process that led you there. And thinking about where that might have taken you instead and kind of the consequences of that can lead to completely new fields of mathematics and really deep stuff.
Really deep. Wise words there from the very young Vi Hart. She calls herself a mathemusician. And her blog and doodling website can be found at vihart.com.